I think what's very exciting is to watch how in some communities, the new and old media together are working on focusing on how they can become the public square for areas of the country that have lost their sense of public life. So my hope is that all of these new technologies will simply be used for that kind of exchange, connecting citizens to each other, rather than perpetuating this constant roil of entertainment and tabloid titillation that really diverts people from the main events in life, which is let's get through life and try to improve our lot for our children and our children's children.
Democracy and journalism in the age of digital communications, next on Soundings. I'm Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Join me now for a conversation with Ellen Hume of the Public Broadcasting Service. She's here to argue the merits of what she calls civic journalism. Major funding for this edition of Soundings comes from the Computer World Smithsonian Awards Program, created in 1989 to honor innovative uses of information technology that benefit society. Ellen Hume is a bread-in-the-bone journalist, but these days she's as much critic as practitioner of the journalistic arts. She argues that now, when the flow of information in our society has never been greater, solid reporting has been replaced by entertainment and hasty analysis. At the same time, because of emerging technologies, the potential for creating the electronic equivalent of the town square has never been better. Ellen Hume recently participated in a conference at the National Humanities Center on democracy in the age of digital communications. She directs the Democracy Project at the Public Broadcasting Service.
First of all, both journalists and institutional politics in this country, and I'm thinking of the Democratic and Republican parties in particular, are all facing the same set of issues, and part of it is driven by the new technology. One is that they no longer have a monopoly on setting the agenda, even the political agenda in this country. They don't have a monopoly on sources of information anymore. And they don't have a monopoly on the public's trust. The public's trust is eroding. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I think the audiences for both, for the news and for politics, are restless. And they're looking for other sources of power, other sources of information. And so this is a critical moment for institutional politics and for journalism. And I will talk mostly, I think, about journalism, because that's what I think about the most. But it's interesting to me that I think there's a great demand for guidance through this flood of information that the internet has provided, mm-hmm. not just the internet, but all the cable television developments, the proliferation of sources of information.
Well, it's kind of, let me stop you, Ellen. It's kind of pointless to look at the technology, and if I hear you correctly, to say that here is sort of the villain. I mean, it's irretrievable. It's inevitable. It is going to happen to us. And so how do we get around this this problem of blending this new technology with the noble ambitions that you harbor, I take it, as a journalist?
Oh, well, I don't see technology as a bad thing. I see it as very, very much a plus. It's all in the how it's used and how citizens can figure out how to use it effectively. And I emphasize that it's up to the citizens to be using it. It's not up to the great leaders to be sending it to the citizens. It's really a user system. Now, let me describe a couple of things about the role of journalism in all this. In the old days, when I was starting out as a journalist back in aught, in the last century,
right.
We thought that we were the eyes and ears of the public, and that was our grand mission. I mean, it was a fun job. I loved going out and covering the Patty Hearst case and, you know, all sorts of crime and weather and crazy stories in L.A. and Detroit and Boston and all over the country.
And I noticed that you said job, not profession.
Well, it was a job. It was an adventure.
Right.
It was romantic. It was Lois Lane. It was Brenda Starr. It was fun. And
right.
It was also high-minded, I have to say, and I know that I'm not the only one who came into this thinking that we were going to make the world a better place, not by pushing our ideology, but by sharing with people out there who couldn't be in the room when politicians cut the deals, by people who couldn't be at the great event that we could see as journalists. Our job was to share it, to spread the word,
right.
to share that, and not to to spin it, not to say who was the good guy and the bad guy.
So that's what has happened, basically.
Well, but let me tell you what's
happened.
We got the spin here. Well, I think it's more than that. I think it's that we were replaced by the camera and the radio microphone to some extent. Now citizens, people out there, have their own direct experience with the great events of our time. And the cameras have now gone into the back rooms. If you look at C-SPAN, they've, you know, you will actually follow a campaign trail for a day with somebody with no comment. You can follow the Dole campaign for a day. So much is now available directly to the public that role for the journalist of being the eyes and ears has been changed. And so the journalist has turned into an analyst rather than a journalist.
Well, now, Ellen, if I wanted to be really cynical, I could accuse you of expressing a lot of job anxiety here. The journalists simply don't have the... It isn't so much necessarily a question of whether people trust them in the analysis they deliver. It's just that, they're increasingly irrelevant to the delivery of information.
Both. It's both. There's clear evidence that this is a moment of truth for journalism, as I said. I think journalism is dead unless active steps are taken by journalists to improve and refresh
now,
their
what
craft.
Have you got in mind, for example?
I've got a number of things in mind. First of all, I think they have to understand what's wrong with what they're doing now. And I think most of the national news, which is what I have focused on for most of the latter part of my career, which is news about policy and politics and how it matters, most of that is encrypted. It is not credible to the public. Part of it is because it's all about some fight between good guys and bad guys in Washington, and
right,
it's about scorekeeping.
Right, the presidential horse race, the numbers
well,
game.
Well, any kind of horse race. It's the health care debate as a horse race. It's
right.
Welfare policy as a horse race. Uh-huh. And I think the myths are not being challenged, but rather they're just being spouted out. And I think what's happened is that journalists have lost the moral high ground that perhaps they never had for a lot of people. But I know many of us who were practicing this believed we were doing something honorable and neutral that was simply providing information. And I think that unless journalists get back to figuring out what information is both valuable and relevant to the average citizen, then I think that they're going to lose their mandate and the profession will be lost.
Well, let's talk about how this scenario, this pretty grim scene that you were describing, Ellen Hume, might change. We have just come from a conference at the National Humanities Center called Deliberative Democracy in the Information Age. Now, I'm not pointing the finger specifically at you, but let me put it to you this way. This is the kind of confabulation where you get people in your shoes who have been reporters, who have risen through the ranks, people who are now actually running these networks and these news organizations. They come in and they lament this situation, and then they go back to practicing precisely the kind of thing that they've just been condemning. Now, am I too harsh here in this?
Well, you're certainly harsh on public broadcasting because we think we are the one place that has tried to do a whole new paradigm of journalism. You're going to get the old along with the new. You're going to get the talking heads, the pundits from Washington, hopefully not shouting on PBS, but right. certainly talking. That's what I called the old form, and some people find that a useful exchange of information. I would certainly not want to take it away. But what we're trying to grow at PBS, and I think you will see it also at a number of local television and newspaper and radio outlets around the country, is something called civic journalism. And I'll help describe what that is. First of all, I'd like to describe one thing that journalists always stop at. They say, oh, well, the public only wants to be entertained to death, to use Neil Postman's phrase.
Right.
I don't agree with that. My analysis and study as a scholar in recent years, and as a journalist also, is that the public does want trustworthy information that's relevant to their lives. They don't have a whole lot of time to take on a lot of extra stuff that's not credible unless it's extremely entertaining. And because they've lost their trust in the product that news is delivering these days, they'll just look for entertainment values. So we do get the tabloid trend. But I would like to suggest there are a number of things that journalists can do. One is there is a clear market for a guide through this flood of information that the internet and cable and everybody else are providing. A market that says, if you are credible and you have done a good editing job and you're giving me what I need to know for the day, then I will tune into you. That's what the journalist was supposed to be about in the first place. You would think this would be a great time for journalism, but because the news is encrypted and it's gone off on this tabloid trend in a panic, because the broad marketplace has been broken out into niches, there's much more competition for any individual news organization today. Because of that, they have to retool and rethink how they deliver the news.
Well, now, this makes so much sense, Ellen. It sounds so commonsensical. Why isn't journalism as a profession receptive receptive to this kind of thinking.
They are receptive. I have to say that this trend called civic journalism, which is in place in 100 different partnerships around the country, including cities like Boston, Charlotte, North Carolina, Tallahassee, Florida, San Francisco, Wichita, Kansas. It's all over the country. And what it is trying to do is say we have to rethink what the news is about. It's not a bunch of elite people on high delivering information one way. And this is where the new technology comes in. It's really a two-way or multi-way discourse. And what happens is, generally, these news organizations get together and say, we've got to stop trivializing people to death. We've got to stop diverting people with circuses and give them some bread again. And what we do is we have a town hall meeting. We talk about what is on your minds as citizens. What does this election or what does this future of our community mean to you? What are the issues you want to hear about? Then they do a series of issue programs across the media. That's television, newspapers, and radio together joining hands and doing their journalism about that. And then what they do is they come up with a series of topics, and they get the citizens to engage in what their solutions are. And they cover that, they monitor that, but they become the public square. The public square for the citizens.
All right. Now, what is it that will prevent this kind of exchange from turning into just another talk show?
Well, talk radio is very interesting, and I think that some aspects of talk radio are tremendously important and good for democracy. It gives citizens a chance to be heard for a change. Well, public journalism, civic journalism, is trying to take the best of that, and that is to take the really thoughtful or questioning, groping questions and voices of Americans and combining that with perhaps some experts out there, experts we may not think are experts, but getting people to the table to share ideas. Now, one of the problems I have with talk radio as it's configured generally today is in many markets, the number one talk radio show is an entertainment show.
Right.
Its virtues are that it shouts and it shocks and it provokes. Some of that, of course, being entertained, that's part of our culture. I like to be entertained too. But what I'm hoping civic journalism provides is to get beyond the shouting and the joking, and it provides literally a chance for citizens to be taken seriously. So when you see a civic journalism project quoting the Vox Populi, mm-hmm. You will not see the most dramatic quotes. You will not see citizens treated as furniture or emotional drapery around a subject. You will see citizens as the core issue. What are their thoughtful thoughts and responses, not what are their instant dramatic thoughts and responses?
You're talking, Ellen, about the journalist as an editor, somebody who is himself or herself thoughtful, deliberative, who's helping to make that wide public out there make some informed choices rather than, you know, just throwing the coconut pie in the face.
Well, one of the reasons civic journalism is controversial is that some journalists who do the old form think that it is less objective than what they're doing. I think people who really look at how good civic journalism is done recognize that it is not any more shaping or autocratic. In fact, it's probably less so. It's allowing citizens to have more of a voice about what is in the news and how the news's priorities are set. But what's threatening to old-line journalists is that they think that this is seeding the editorial eye that will be neutral and that will be fair. And they're most worried of all about having it soften the edge of journalism. They think that to be credible and to be a good watchdog against the abuses of government or the abuses of anything in our society, they have to maintain an independence. And I agree with that completely, that they have to be independent. Journalists have to be watchdogs. The problem is the watchdog is now barking at everything. And as a result, it's lost its bite. And they've gone off on these scandals that are hyped beyond description because everyone's competing with everybody else for a Pulitzer Prize. And what I hope is that civic journalism is not about losing your watchdog edge. It is simply about widening the scope of what is news and describing it in a way that is more accurate about our daily life. Our daily life is not all about plane crashes and truck crashes and scandals by politicians. It's all about what honorable people do every day to try to solve problems as much as it is about the problems that aren't solved.
Ellen Hume, you run the Democracy Project at the Public Broadcasting Service. We're talking about deliberative democracy in the age of digital communications. Let's talk about some of these bells and whistles. Now, you are a journalist. You're not a techie. But I want to give you an opportunity to talk about what some of these new bells and toys and whistles out there, the perils and rewards sort of proposition. What do they do to the way we understand and practice democracy?
Let me say I will answer that. My first answer, though, is that it's not the medium that the problem is these days, it's the message. I want to go back on McLuhan and revise him a little bit and say that if the content isn't right, it doesn't matter what new clothes you put on. It's the opposite of the emperor's new clothes. Uh-huh. I'll just give you an example of one thing that PBS has. Everyone has a lot to show off. But one of the things we're offering, besides our normal television programming, of which we're enormously proud and we have a lot of innovations there, but the thing I will point to on this program in particular is our homepage on the internet. It's at PBS.org, not surprisingly. And we have a Democracy Project homepage that is a subpage of that. And if you click through this, I think you will find that there's an opportunity there to look at Webumentaries from Frontline, right. Which is our premier documentary series on PBS.
Right.
They looked through documents, for example, from the Brown & Williamson Tobacco Company, some documents that were made available through a university to the public. And there's an annotated stroll through these documents to see what, in fact, is the truth about what was going on at this company. But this is only a complement rather than a repeat of the television program Frontline did called Smoke in Your Eye.
Right.
So it's two different pieces of journalism that are complementary to each other, but one is directly available on the internet and really isn't the same as what you would see when you watch the television program.
Now, Ellen, what you're doing here is preaching a civics lesson. You're not giving us so much electronic media and good journalism, bad journalism. You know, as Don Imus says, we got the best news, we lie the least. You're talking to us about going back to high school and learning what it means to be a citizen. Now, that sounds to me like an enormous, if maybe an inappropriate order for the electronic media in this country. How about it?
I think that calling it preaching and saying it's a lesson is a sort of eat your peas problem. And I know there are those out there who say, oh, PBS is trying to get you to eat your peas. I'm determined to have a press briefing at some point where I just serve peas and say, now we've gotten that out of the way and let's talk about what we're really doing. What we're really doing is saying we do not patronize or look down on Americans the way a lot of commercial people do. We do not think they're stupid. We do not think that they are uninterested in the nation's public life. We think that, in fact, ordinary citizens do extraordinary things every day. They step up to the plate to get a garbage dumpster for the neighborhood. They step up to the plate to deal with gang violence in their schools. They step up to the plate to figure out where a garden can be made out of an empty lot. This kind of problem solving is being done every day by ordinary people, by churches, by people who are not calling themselves conservatives or liberals or government or non-government. They're breaking through all those divides and all of those terrible things that have strung up our politics and in fact, our journalism and all these side issues. So what I think we're talking about at PBS is not eat your peas or a preaching or a mission. It is trying to empower the average person in the audience out there to understand you have power. You have ways in which you can make a big difference in your community. You can be a leader. And there is something in this country about pulling together and doing things in groups and trying to help solve problems. And we want to help inspire that by teaching people about what others are doing in that regard. And also by providing an opportunity through email, through feedback. Someday they'll be interactive television in a broader way. We want people to get involved. That's our main mission, but not involved because we have any agenda for them, but because we think their agenda can be very important, and that's what democracy is about.
Now, again, this is all very high-minded and very noble, but what are you going to say to the people at the television stations, particularly the commercial TV stations, as well as the commercial radio stations, as well as the NPR and PBS stations, who have marketing experts, and they go out and they say, what we've got to give people is this, and the result is this lowering, this leveling of result and expectation where you're not delivering this sort of high-minded mission. What you're doing is going after the numbers and trying to get the biggest audience share. Now, what do we got here? Continuity? We got an apparent contradiction? What?
There will always be a big audience for entertainment in television, radio, and every other medium. And I think what we have to understand is that journalism is not the entertainment business. Yes, it should be welcoming. It can be entertaining.
Well, now, wait a minute. It sure looks like the entertainment business
anymore.
Well,
that's the problem. Let me describe to you what I really think about this. In my paper, Tabloids, Talk Radio, and the Future of News, I talk about the pressures on every news organization because their corporate owners need to get a bottom line out of them. They have to entertain more because they're grabbing for something that is no longer, and that is the broad mass audience. That whole formula of mass media is being changed to this niched marketplace. And my argument in that paper, and I hope that it comes true, some people think it's actually a good argument, is that there are niches now in which serious news organizations, and I count PBS, NPR, and some commercial news organizations in that category, I think Nightline on ABC and a number of others try very hard to be serious news organizations, that they, in fact, have a very vibrant future economically. They could make money. I don't mean necessarily PBS, but I'm saying the commercial people could in this niche, because I do believe they're serving something they are not getting now. What's happening now is by having many journalism outlets, including a lot of local news, go tabloid, go for the celebrity, sex, and violence formula that seems to grab an entertainment audience, they are losing their mandate as a place where people go for real information. That's why the polls show over and over again that audiences are down, that people don't trust the press. In fact, there's a wonderful poll that, it's terrible, but it really proves my point. 71% of the American people feel that the press gets in the way of Americans solving their problems. This was a Times Mirror poll taken about 2 years ago. Those numbers have not changed. Trust is down. So what do journalists do as a result? They've got to get back to their decision that they are something different from simply entertainment or propaganda. They have to be something that is unique, that's journalism. And I think a lot of people have lost the definition of that.
Ellen, what would you say to the people who are doing the new forms of media, the new electronic technologies, the internet, email, the World Wide Web? Here's an opportunity for you to preach to them as well. What do you say to these characters to get them to sort of buy this argument that you were making about reshaping journalism?
Well, please don't call me a preacher.
A missionary.
First of all, because that puts everybody off, you know. Maybe you could call it me a stripper, because I want to strip down information from all this encryption that says this is about strategy, this is about who's up and who's down. You know, today's journalism is like a fixed wrestling contest, and the referees are the journalists. And yeah. God help you if you're an audience member, you're treated like a dupe. Oh, you thought it was a serious thing? It is not a game. Government is not a game. Politics is not a game.
Well, back to these electronic gurus. What do you say to them?
The electronic gurus need to understand that the content of what they're delivering is the key. And if they can get a trust in their brand for their content, then it almost doesn't matter what bells and whistles they put on. But here's what some of the bells and whistles are doing to content. And here's some of the potential. When you have an internet, as we do now, certain things happen to old-fashioned journalism. One, as I said before, is you don't have a monopoly on the sources. The public can second guess what journalism is about because they can go back to the original sources very, very easily. They can get the full text of the press release, or they can watch or listen to the audio and video of the actual events at hand. So what does that do to the journalist? It means the journalist has to be smart. The journalist has to select what's true, figure out what is useful there, and create that trust area that if you come to this spot, you know this is something that's been checked and verified, not rumors, which is what a lot of journalists stupidly are falling into and trying to entertain. Another factor is, of course, time. Time news on the internet is constant. There is no deadline because it is all the time. And when you have a constant deadline, you can make a choice. You can either decide that means you throw all your raw notes out there without checking because hurry up, it's a constant deadline. Or it means you can double check facts. You can take a little more time before you put any story on. There is no deadline anymore. So what you can do then is have more verified information, i.e. more trustworthy. I think that's what's very useful for your marketplace niche, for your audience appeal. The third thing is space and place. Now, we all know that television and radio made it international, global, the global communications network. But what the internet has helped to do is to also make everything more local, so that you have a lot of local material fed nationally and internationally. And this is very exciting. Now, the internet is also, that's an example of what happens with this instant local information. Somebody from somewhere who can be incredibly remote and unempowered and unappealing in many ways can throw something up on the internet as a piece of information, a factoid, a picture, a video clip, an audio clip, and that suddenly has the same resonance as a multi-zillion dollar fact that has been produced directed by major entertainment figures.
Well, that's if people can find it. That's assuming they know how to get to it on the internet.
Well, I do think that that's a real problem with technology, that in fact we're still in the pioneer stages. And I must say that there's an awful lot about the materials that I try to work with on my own computer at home, where I'm trying to cruise around the internet to find out what other people are doing about the election and other things, ideas I can get for reaching kids with information about good role models and things they can be doing in their communities. And I stumble all the time on trying to get through to this information. I don't know what language the geeks think they're speaking, but often it's just very simple. How do I get this information? What do I do? Give me a 10-step process. This is rarely included in the instructions on any homepage. So I do think we have a long way to go. And this may be turning some people off who might be taking advantage of this. But one thing I would say about the new technologies, I think the histories of new technologies in the past teach us a lesson that I think is valuable here. And that is that old technologies generally live alongside of new ones. They do not instantly replace old ones. We still have radio, believe it or not, even though we have TV.
Thank heaven.
And the fax technology, of course, as you know, was invented a long, long time ago, but just not used. And so I think we're finding that it's not necessarily that the internet is replacing television or that television is replacing radio and all down the chain. It's more that each is finding a different niche. And I would really recommend that the people who are trying to create market opportunities for the new niches, the internet, online materials, learn the lessons from the past technologies. And that is that if you want to go out with something special, focus on getting the basics right. Get the basics right before you try to do something frilly. And again, the content is what's going to carry anything through all these new formats.
You're listening to Soundings, a radio magazine about books and ideas from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. My guest was Ellen Hume, director of the Democracy Project at the Public Broadcasting Service. Major funding for this edition of Soundings came from the Computer World Smithsonian Awards Program, created in 1989 to honor innovative uses of information technology that benefit society. Audio tapes are available for $10 post-paid. Please write to us at Soundings, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. Our zip code is 27709. When you write, please ask for program number 831. That's $10, program number 831. The address again is Soundings, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. Our zip code is 27709. Next week on Soundings, Writing God's Life. Book review editor and scholar Jack Miles will be here to talk about his Pulitzer Prize-winning book, God, A Biography. Until next week's show, this is Wayne Pond. Thanks for listening to Soundings. Our theme music is by Jeff Perry. Soundings is a cultural affairs service of the National Humanities Center.